Disrespect welcomes Christopher Reagan, an economics professor at McGill University in Montreal. He's going to talk to us about the likelihood of slow growth and the possibility of stimulus through unemployed people's incomes. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Okay. We've talked about the crises that we've undergone, and we've examined your point of view on that you think the crisis is maybe past us. What your concern is in this quote in today's Globe, Monday, September 12th, what's almost as bad, frankly, as chugging along at, say, 1.5% growth. Meanwhile, the labor force is growing at 1%, so that means unemployment starts to rise. Now, you've postulated stimulating the economy through supplying money that flows right through the unemployed into the market, and you brought up that while we're also in an enviable position from many countries' position in the world, we're still looking at rising, possibly rising unemployment. Do you see the two linked?
Well, let me put this comment in the context. We certainly, in the past several weeks, we have seen a lot of evidence that that the United States economy, the Canadian economy, is slowing down, are slowing down. There certainly seems to be continued financial market jitters, or worse, coming from Europe.
Right.
So I think we are starting to put, we, the profession, set of forecasters, policymakers, are starting to put more probability on a near future that instead of, you know, coming back to 2.5 or 3% growth in national income, which
right.
is GDP, might look more like 1.5% or 1.8% or 2%, so a slower rate of growth. Finance Minister Jim Flaherty, I heard him say recently in an interview that, you know, while growth is fragile and the recovery is fragile, it still looks like we're going to have positive growth, and
okay.
you know, that's clearly better than zero, and
yeah.
he's absolutely right.
Yeah.
My concern is that if we come to expect
mm-hmm.
1.5 growth over the next few years, if that comes to be a reasonable description of the future,
mm-hmm.
You know, we still live in a world where the population is growing at roughly 1% in Canada, and so the labor force, aside from aging issues, the labor force is growing roughly along in line with that.
Well, and older workers' opportunities are trying to be extended by the government right
fair
now,
enough.
Too. So.
So we may be moving into a situation where growth remains positive, but it doesn't remain high enough to be absorbing that growing labor force.
Okay.
And even though the labor force may be growing at in the near future, may be growing at a slower rate than in the recent past,
mm-hmm.
it's still going to be growing.
Okay.
And that means we may observe unemployment rates rising. I mean, I hope we don't.
Right.
But this is a problem the United States has been having, and they are still having, is that the whatever growth they've got is not fast enough to actually absorb their growing labor force, and their unemployment rate has remained fairly high. Ours is lower than the United States, but it isn't falling very quickly
right.
and may stop falling and may start rising. And that's my concern.
Okay.
And then that, of course, gets you to the question of, well, if we're going to have slower growth rather than faster, should we provide more government stimulus?
Okay.
And we could talk about monetary policy stimulus. We could talk about fiscal stimulus.
Can you just
we could talk about other things.
As an anecdote, can you just briefly characterize monetary versus fiscal for the listener?
Well, monetary policy is what is done in this country by the Bank of Canada. That's the central bank.
Okay.
And so,
it has to do with money supply.
Yeah, it happens to do with money supply, but we don't usually talk about it in terms of the money supply. We usually talk about it in terms of the central bank targeting a very short-term interest rate,
okay.
an overnight interest rate.
Okay.
And so, you know, if the Bank of Canada, for example, makes an announcement every 6 or 8 weeks about where they are going to target the overnight interest rate, and just last week, I guess it was, they said they would remain, at least for the next 6 or 8 weeks, they would remain targeting 1%.
Okay.
And then other interest rates kind of feed off that interest rate.
Right.
And so one question going forward is, if the economy doesn't speed up and if unemployment does rise, then, you know, will the Bank of Canada actually lower interest rates?
All right.
So that's one option.
Right. Then there was fiscal policy.
Then there's fiscal policy, so that is now, you know, Jim Flaherty in the Department of Finance deciding whether at this point it could be trying to stimulate the economy through tax cuts, or it could be stimulating the economy through greater government spending.
Mm-hmm.
And there are problems, in my view, given our current situation, there are some problems with both monetary and fiscal stimulus. Would you like me to talk about that? Well, the problem with monetary policy at this point is that if, in fact, we are in this very fragile recovery, where there's perhaps not very much confidence, there's a lot of what is called deleveraging going on in the Canadian economy and elsewhere. So this is people digging out from being under debt, whether we're talking about corporations or banks or households.
All right.
So if that is what the recovery is going to look like over the next few years, and there's some fairly compelling evidence that recoveries after financial crises tend to be slower and longer than recoveries after just run-of-the-mill recessions.
Okay.
And if that's the case, then we can expect slower growth, and we can maybe expect unemployment to either remain high for a while or maybe even rise.
Okay.
And in that world, if confidence is low, and that's a key point, if confidence remains low, it may be the case that a further cut in interest rates by a quarter or half a percentage point, it would help, but it may not help that much, because interest rates, the cost of borrowing, may not be the most important binding constraint for either firms to do investment or families to build new homes. There may be other concerns.
There's not a lot of room for a dramatic change either at 1%.
And there's not. That's right. So my sense is that while monetary policy might help, we might expect it, in this context, monetary policy to be less powerful than usual.
All right.
So then you look over back to Jim Flaherty and say, well, maybe we should do, you know, year three of a fiscal stimulus. So as you know, the budgets of 2009 and 10 were pretty aggressive fiscal stimulus budgets. A little bit of action on the tax side, but most of it was on the temporary government spending to finance infrastructure, et cetera.
Right.
Well, one of the problems with that, I think it works in the sense that it injects spending into the economy. The problem is that using fiscal policy to stabilize the economy or to try to increase the growth rate of the economy requires your policies to be fairly timely. And one of the problems with fiscal policy always is that, you know, it's hard to do it when you need it. So if the federal government were to decide to have phase three of a fiscal stimulus package and decided to devote a bunch of new spending to infrastructure, the problem is you don't just, you know, there aren't existing plans for projects just ready to go.
That's what they wanted the last time, right? Shovel-ready projects.
Shovel-ready projects. Well, shovel-ready projects would be great if you just happen to have shovel-ready projects.
Yeah.
But you don't generally have a, you know, I don't think, I never certainly met the civil servant in Ottawa who has a drawer full of environmentally cleared design plans all ready to go, and all they require is some money. So once you decide to spend, you then have to come up with a project. You then have to design the project. You have to, you know, and design is not an immediate thing. So you have to design it. You have to get whatever environmental clearances need to be done. And the project just takes a while. And it may well be the case that that project really only comes online 6 or 9 months down the road, and maybe by then the economy is already in its own recovery.
So it doesn't have the effect you intended.
Well, it doesn't have the stimulative effect now.
Yeah.
So then you say, well, okay, is there some other option for fiscal policy?
Right.
And one other option is to try to put, through one mechanism or another, try to put money just directly in the hands of people. So you could do this by making welfare payments more generous, and that would be directed right at low-income people.
Right.
And they would tend to spend a fair chunk of what they get.
Yeah, they're not investors.
Because they tend to spend a fair chunk of their disposable income.
Yeah.
You could also do it through more generous unemployment insurance payments, or we now call it employment insurance payments.
Right.
And not only would that likely be a quicker injection of spending in the economy, so that's good,
right.
But it would also be aiming your policy really directly at the people who are probably the most vulnerable.
Yeah.
Low-income people, people who are either low-income, not because of employment, but, I mean, they're in a situation where they're getting Canada assistance, so it's welfare.
Right.
Or they are low-income because they have lost their job and they're continuing to look for jobs, so you can at least make that process of finding a new job a little bit less painful.
Yeah.
But there's one big problem with this.
Right.
And that is, if you wanted to do this in a temporary way, I mean, let's suppose the Minister of Finance said, let's increase the generosity of UI, by X percent for a year.
Right.
Well, that feels good for a year. Mm-hmm. And then a year later, when you pull it away, there is likely to be an outcry.
Mm-hmm.
And so reversing those kinds of increases in generosity for welfare or UI, it would be politically very, very difficult. So the problem is there's no option, at least that I've talked about, that is, guaranteed to work with no problems. They've all got problems associated with it.
Didn't the government get around it by extending UI temporarily?
They did, and when it came to, as I recall, and I may be wrong on this, but as I recall, when they came to then kind of reverse those changes,
right,
the first time they delayed it. Mm. Why? Because because it would have been politically unpopular to do so.
Yeah.
So it's just always difficult to do. It doesn't mean it can't be done, but it's just difficult to do.
Okay.
So, I think there is a good reason that we should be putting. Let me come back to my characterization of the next 2 or 3 years as very likely to be a slow growth recovery. If that's the way we see it, then I think there is good reason for us to just be thinking more and to putting more policy emphasis on let me call it the vulnerable people, the unemployed or the people, very low income people, because those are the people that are likely to bear the burden of that. You know, the people, the 90% of the labor force who still, 93% of the labor force who still have their jobs, as long as they keep employed at an unchanged income, a recession doesn't hurt them that much.
All right.
Financial market volatility hurts some of them.
Yeah.
But if you still have your job, then a recession doesn't look that bad. But if you are one of the unlucky 7 or 8% who've lost your job and perhaps are still looking for a job, you're the ones that are really going to be hurt.
Yeah.
And if we're not going to bounce back out of this recession quickly, then maybe we should be putting more emphasis in our policies on the labor market.
Yeah, making sure as much as we can that people don't lose jobs.
And that if you can prevent them from losing jobs, that's one thing. But also, while they're searching, if you can make that search a little bit less painful.
Right. What do you think of the point of view that extending or enlarging unemployment benefits also extends and enlarges unemployment?
Well, I mean, the way unemployment insurance works, or I you can tell my age, I should call it employment insurance, but it takes a long time to learn that new trick. The way employment insurance works is that by either lengthening the time for which an unemployed worker gets payments or increasing the dollar value of the payment, it makes it less difficult to remain unemployed.
All right.
So it probably makes, for some searching workers, they will be less likely to accept their first job offer or their second job offer. They're more likely to wait for the appropriate job offer. So there's both good and bad with that. On the one hand, it probably allows better job matching. I mean, we don't want unemployed workers to just accept the first job that comes along.
Right.
We want them to accept the right job.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, the more generous,
how much tax do you get from an engineer working at McDonald's when he could be working for an aerospace company?
Well, having an engineer flipping burgers just seems to me to be kind of a misallocation of resources, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the engineering company wants an engineer, and the engineer probably wants to be hired by an engineering company, and that's an appropriate job match.
Yeah.
So one benefit of unemployment insurance for society is that we get better job matches.
Okay.
But one cost of unemployment insurance for society is that we may get people searching a little too long, waiting a little bit too long, getting a little bit too choosy, if you like.
All right.
So how you draw the, I mean, so setting the appropriate level of employment insurance payments is about striking that balance. I'm not a specialist on unemployment insurance.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we're exactly at that balance.
Mm-hmm. In an economy where there are no jobs, such as maybe the American economy, it strikes me that that is less likely that people are going to be choosy. They're just going to want a job. Certainly, if it's possible to pick a better job than the low offer on the totem pole, they will. But they're not going to hang around looking for jobs when they have one, and they know that nobody else has got one.
Well, that may be true. I think you're probably right that the longer somebody remains unemployed, the more willing they become to accept a job offer. However, there's something else that works in the other direction, is that somebody remains unemployed, it may get harder to get another job offer because maybe your skills have deteriorated during that time that you've been unemployed.
Well, and people begin to wonder, even McDonald's begins to wonder, why have you been out of work so long?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So longer-term unemployment, and the United States and Canada historically have not had a large fraction of their unemployment be long-term unemployment.
That's true.
Typically, they've been very good, very flexible labor markets in that sense, is that we had a fair amount of turnover in labor markets. And so not only do we have a low unemployment rate, typically, relative to, say, countries in Western Europe, but
Spain.
A smaller fraction of our unemployment was long-term. Well, in the United States, in the last 2 years, we've seen an increase in long-term unemployment. We've seen an increase in Canada as well, but not as much.
Right.
I think this is a bigger issue in the United States today than it is in Canada.
Yeah.
But just going forward, again, if we're going to have 1.5 or 1.8% growth of real GDP for the next 3 years instead of getting back to 2 and 2.5 and 3, if that's what we're going to have, then this may become a bigger issue in our near future.
Yeah, so you're saying that their unemployment rate is quite a bit higher than ours, but if ours starts to grow, we can't count on that remaining
right.
the case.
That's right.
And in that case, we could consider a judicious stimulus by accommodating the vulnerable.
Yes, and I think it's interesting. Last was it weekend? I saw a newspaper just recently in the last few days where Prime Minister Stephen Harper was talking about focusing on unemployment, focusing on the labor market.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah.
Being flexible in terms of fiscal stimulus. I mean, being prepared to say, we are prepared to do it if we need it. I think that's an appropriate position to take. I'm not yet convinced that we need phase three of a fiscal stimulus package.
Okay.
Counting 2009 budget as phase one and 2010 budget as phase two. But if we need it, I think we should do it. And one thing that's certainly true is that Canada's public debt position is much lower than in most other countries. And so if there's any developed country that can afford to do more fiscal stimulus, it is us. And I'm not convinced yet that we need it, but if we do, then I would start thinking about the labor market, and that's I think one interpretation of what Prime Minister Harper was saying is that we want to focus more on the labor market than on just injecting spending. I'm not sure he said anything specifically about infrastructure, but that's one way to interpret what he's saying.
Well, if they already funded the shovel ready projects, I mean, infrastructure looks less attractive the third time around too.
Right.
How would the federal government? What instruments can the federal government adopt to help vulnerable people in the interest of stimulating the economy?
Well, so I've mentioned two. There are others. So one is you could make welfare receipts more generous.
Well, that's provincial.
Okay.
Mind you, the funds come from the federal government through provincial transfers.
Yeah.
And that's coming up in 2014.
Yep. So the second is unemployment insurance or employment insurance. You could tweak the benefits in that system.
Okay.
Another is that you could simply look at your income tax system, and you could lower rates at the low end. You could increase the basic personal amount, the basic personal exemption.
Right.
You could make the working income tax benefit more generous, the WITB, which was, I think, introduced in 2007, and it's actually quite a smart policy to try to reduce the marginal income tax rate for low-income working people and thereby provide a greater incentive for people to work. Through the income tax system, you could do it. I'm not an income tax specialist either, but there are lots of people in the Department of Finance that could come up with ways that you could actually make changes to the income tax system that would help, that would generally help low-income people.
Well, usual income tax adjustments, I think, are overrated because the most vulnerable people are generally not eligible to pay a lot of tax.
Okay,
so they need some kind of direct check or something like that, or
well,
some
so that
kind
brings
of incentive
to mind,
program.
So you could make the low-income GST tax credit a little bit more generous if you wanted to do that.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, and again, none of these may be perfect, although, you know, a combination of them may actually be very effective. But again, the problem with any of these is if you do them as a temporary measure, they're very difficult to turn around. Politically, very difficult to turn around.
Yeah. Yeah. So in a democratic society, we really don't have a way to introduce unfavorable cutbacks, do we? That's foolproof.
Well, I mean, if you're going to introduce a budget to make the EI benefits more generous, you can also introduce a budget a year later to make them less generous. You can do it.
Yeah.
But politically, you should expect some opposition to that.
Well, it strikes me then you need a kind of a package of benefits geared to potentially rising employment and rising incomes so that the benefits move up the income scale as the populace moves up the income scale, something like that, so that you're taking more money from the people you're giving benefits to as time goes on, and in effect reducing the benefit because you're... You know,
basically clawing back the benefit as their personal situation improves.
Yeah.
You can do that, and then that requires a fair amount of design, you know, before you do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't think any of this is easy. I mean, things that are, you know, things that are technically easy are often politically difficult.
Okay.
Things that are politically easy are often technically difficult.
Oh, okay.
And so... I guess that's just a general property that there's general example of the general property that there's no free lunch in life.
Yeah, that's an interesting conundrum for someone who's looking for stimulus to flow through vulnerable people. So, sum it up in my own perception, you wouldn't bet money on a second turndown, and you wouldn't bet money at this point on the need for further stimulus. But if there were, you would look forward to stimulus of the vulnerable, the unemployed, as a best way to pump money into the economy. And the question then becomes how to get it back when the stimulus is no longer required. What can even through inflation, could you get it back? Or,
you know, the Bank of Canada is doing its best to keep inflation low and stable.
Yeah.
At about 2%.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing for it to be doing. And they can do that while they are providing monetary stimulus during a recession, as they have been doing.
Right.
So I don't think we want a situation where we increase the inflation rate, especially.
Yeah.
I don't think we get significant gains from that. I certainly don't think it really helps the problem of the low-income people or the unemployed people.
No. Okay. So, yeah, the problem remains then clawing back these potential stimulus benefits, but it may be a luxury that we have to accept we don't have a solution for now if we need that stimulus then,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, possibly in the future, possibly in the near future, depending on which way the American and European economies go.
Well, we'll have a fall fiscal update.
Uh-huh. When will that be?
We usually do.
When will that be?
I would expect it to be sometime in the in the latter half of October. I think that's kind of a typical a typical time for this.
All right.
So there, you know, the government may provide some hints, then they might actually do something.
Okay.
But then we have a budget in March. So, you know, one of the things I learned when I was at the Department of Finance visiting for a year and a half is that the budget can change and does change you know, pretty much up to the last minute, you know, the last 48 hours.
Okay.
And so, you know, a lot can happen between now and middle of January.
Yeah.
And if the economy is looking a lot worse, then, you know, I think that gives you a set of predictions for what the March budget will look like. But if by January things have picked up and the forecasts are looking pretty good at that point, that gives you a different prediction about what to expect in the March budget.
Well, then you have to factor in, I guess the finance department has got that locked down, but then you have to factor in the big slump right after Christmas, right?
Well,
so
but
they
that's
do seasonally adjusted,
you know, hopefully that's
rates.
Just a seasonal blip.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking about a longer term, like medium, what I guess we would call a medium term projection.
Okay.
So, you know, if U.S. growth is looking better, if the European financial situation is looking better, and I'm not, you know, holding my breath for that. but in 4 months, I mean, I just think back to the last 8 weeks, I think our tone about the world economy is considerably more negative today than it was 8 weeks ago. Well, that suggests to me that 8 weeks from now or 16 weeks from now, our tone could be either a lot more negative than it is today or, in fact, a lot more positive than it is today. I mean, things do change.
Okay.
And
so,
things can change fairly quickly.
So as the citizens of an exporting country, even the vulnerable, even people who are unemployed or people who are marginally employed or people who are on welfare, if they want to read the future, one of the clues they can get is they should look at the economies of the world around us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, Canada is not, as both Harper and Flaherty have said, Canada is not an island.
Right.
You know, we did very well in the financial crisis. We experienced the financial crisis, but not to the same extent that it was felt in Europe and the United States. We experienced a recession that at the beginning, in terms of GDP, looked actually pretty much like what we felt, what was felt in the United States. But on the labor market side, it was considerably less painful. But we still do most of our trade with the United States.
Yeah.
And so it is inconceivable to me that the United States could have a either stagnant economy or a double dip, and it wouldn't influence us. The logic within me tells me it's got to influence us, because if they're not buying, you know, car parts and machine tools and houses and furniture, then chances are they're not buying a lot of that stuff from us.
Right.
And so that's going to be a reduction in demand for our exports, and that's very important for us.
Yeah. So it's a good news, bad news story. I mean, for the vulnerable people, if the world economy deteriorates, Canada's economy probably deteriorates, although maybe not a proportional amount. And they might see short-term stimulus in the form of some support for the vulnerable in our society. But the long-term picture is, if the world economy deteriorates, our job opportunities deteriorate for a while.
I would
too.
Have to agree with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good news, bad news. Okay.
And remember, the only reason the good news is in that story is because of the bad news.
That's
right.
That's right. Okay.
What the good news is the response to the bad news. So.
Okay. All right. I appreciate your making that clear for us. Is there anything else you wanted to say about this before we wrap it up?
No, I'm sure I've talked far more than I should have.
No, I think you brought us to a very interesting picture of what's going on and how it will affect the vulnerable people as opposed to working people and what the signs for the future are. No, I appreciate that very much.
No, my pleasure.
All right. Thanks, Christopher.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.